John Mackey founded a store called Safer Way back in 1978 that would ultimately transform into Whole Foods and being sold for $13.7 billion to Amazon in 2017. It all started with a belief in health benefits through natural foods to help people. A guy with the same name felt the same way about health and wealth benefits, but this John Mackey played for the NFL, and he would end up leading a different type of revolution.
Welcome to the Football History Dude Podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. Your host is Arnie Chapman. Football is his passion, and he wants you to come along with him to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board his DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
This time as we step off our DeLorean, the date is March 20th, 2019 at 7:21 a.m., and we're in your car. We're on the way to work or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Now I'm riding shucking with you because we're listening to last week's episode, which was part one of a four-part series that we're embarking on covering the history of the NFLPA. But let's get a rewind. You see, it all started with Bill Radovich, the father of sports labor action. He requested his release for either more pay or to be traded to the West Coast so he could be closer to his sick father. He ended up getting blacklisted. He was fed up with this, so he sued, and ultimately, almost a decade later, would end up winning against the NFL because he would finally win in the Supreme Court. And about this same time, the NFLPA was formed. The NFLPA was formed in November of 1956. So through the 50s, the players would end up gaining a little bit of a ground because of the NFLPA was by their side. But there was so much more to go. And this episode talks about the 60s and 70s and how they went from basically nothing to feeling like, hey, we're onto something here. But mind you, most of the information seems more from a player point of view. And that's because I'm covering the NFLPA. It doesn't mean that the players are always right. It doesn't mean that the owners are always right. In fact, there's always two sides of every coin, even if that's a double-sided head coin, because there's always another side. So here we are, though. The next chapter of the NFLPA, firing up our DeLorean to go to August of 1959. This is the first meeting of the AFL. But what does this have to do with the NFLPA? In a way, kind of a lot, because think about it. You and I just took that DeLorean to August of 1959. Let's just pretend that this announcement of the formation of the AFL comes over the radio. We're hearing this announcement. We're looking at each other. We're going, hey, this could be good for us. Because we have a rival league, the AFL, that's going to start, forcing possibly the NFL to play ball here with more players. Kind of keep them in line. Keep them honest. But au contraire, sometimes it had the opposite effect. You see, the owner-controlled pension plan had an amendment clause that was tossed in there after the foundation of the AFL. Basically, it stated, if you jump ship to the AFL, well, you're going to lose your pension here with the NFL. So, this would result in players threatening antitrust suits again and end up giving them more positive gains. They would acquire better life insurance and health coverage, but then also, they would have, for the first time, two player reps that would be designated to sit on the retirement board. So this league competition between the AFL and the NFL might have helped with higher salaries, and the owners were getting concerned. But then, 1966, we've got this merger, and it puts a stop to all of this jumping ship and getting better salaries kind of deal. And this comes from the NFLPA's website. The NFLPA tried to oppose special federal antitrust legislation to exempt the merger, but its meager funds weren't enough to hire lobbyists or mount an effective opposition. So, failure brings out the best, and it brings out the worst in people. So the Teamsters Union pounced. They tried to get players to go union. You know, they figured if we can get a union together, then we could take it to the man. But at this time, it was split amongst the ranks, you know, the higher-ups in the organization, between the players that wanted to keep it just an association and the players that wanted to go union. So in January of 1968, at a player rep meeting in Florida, they would have two labor attorneys from Chicago, Dan Schulman and Bernie Baum, help everyone come to an agreement. They would ultimately decide that they would stay as the NFLPA and they reject the Teamsters Union. Now this was a step forward because the NFL agreed to work with the NFLPA if there was not a union that existed. So the owners, again, they would pull the shade over the eyes of the NFL players and the NFLPA. Because even though the NFL agreed to negotiate with the NFLPA if there was not a union, they just decided, hey, we're not going to bargain with you now. So I'm thinking, you know, what do you got How come you're not holding your word to it? What are you scared of? What are you scared of the outcome? Or is it just you really do have this narcissist, I'm an owner and I can control everything. But there was one problem. Even if they wanted to get together and they really wanted to have this bargaining chip, the NFLPA and the AFL Players Association, they were still separate entities. Because the leagues, they were merging, AFL and NFL, they're getting together. But the owners are smart. They're going to pit these associations against each other. Just like you might pit a couple rivals against each other, you know. The enemy of my friend is the friend of my enemy, and the enemy of your enemy is the friend of your friend, and all those kinds of things. And let's just get them all against each other because we can sit back and take out whoever is left. So still, in 1968, the NFLPA would only represent 16 of the 26 teams because the other 10 were represented by the AFL Association. So they proposed, even though they didn't have everybody, a new pension plans for upcoming season. The players prepared to go on strike if these demands were not met. The owners tried locking them out at first, and the result ended up being positive because this would get to the first ever collective bargaining agreement, but not what the NFLPA had hoped for because they didn't quite get their original demands, even though they gained some traction. Their original demands were, we want minimum salaries for rookies at $15,000 and veterans at $20,000. We want $500 pay for each player for exhibition games. Lower that retirement age to 45 and give us impartial grievance for arbitration. At the time, these demands sounded great. However, after the agreement, you realized they were basically walking away with their tails behind their legs because what really happened was they got a minimum salary of $9,000 for rookies. Yeah, that's $6,000 less what they were hoping for. And $10,000 for veterans, which was half of what they were looking for. They also only basically kept the $50 for exhibition games. The commissioner still held the arbitration rights, and the retirement age is at 65. So let's just say, if I saw these outcomes, and I was trying to hire some lawyer dudes, I would stay away. I'm not hiring these guys. But we knew it was going to be a long battle. It's kind of like I know that the NFL and the NFLPA battle is going to be a long one. You know, we're going to stick in for a while. There's a difference, for instance, the Battle of Verdun from World War I basically almost lasted a whole year, as opposed to the Hiroshima bombing, when the Enola Gay dropped the little boy, and at 8:15 in a blink of an eye, the world changed. We're not getting that type of a swift action here. We're going to have to dig in the trenches, just like in World War I, and we're going to have to fight our way through the Battle of Verdun for a very long time. Okay, so one of the reasons that the NFLPA website said that they accepted the terms of the time was because AFL Players Association already accepted it. So they pretty much felt forced to. It's like, come on, man, we're trying to be on the same team. I know we're different entities, but let's do this thing together. So in fact, 1970, the AFL and NFL truly merged, even though they started the merger earlier. This is when they started having regular season games together. It was about time for both player associations to do the same thing. So 1970, we have this AFL-NFL player association merger. Just like everything else, just like the AFL was wary of coming into the NFL, because they were worried about being swallowed up and not being able to do what they want to, the AFLPA was worried about the NFLPA as well. I guess you could say it's similar to, I'm getting invited to the parents' table because I'm getting a little older, but are they really going to let me talk? Or are they just going to kind of look over at me and snark and say, you know, things behind my back when I have ideas? But we got to try it. We still got to go forward with it. So of course, when they got together, both sides wanted their man to lead the charge. The NFLPA pushed for Ed Meter to be the president, and the AFL pushed for Jack Kemp. But this wasn't going to work out. So ultimately, they agreed for John Mackey of the Baltimore Colts to be the new president. And we talked about John Mackey and his fight against the Roselle Rule back in episode 55 of the podcast. There's a link to this episode over in the show notes, which you can get to through your podcast player or by heading to thefootballhistorydude.com. Also, I ask that you subscribe for free to this show by mashing that little subscribe button on your podcast player choice. That way you get the hottest, freshest off the press episodes each and every week. But let's get back to Mackey. He was considered a hero of the NFLPA, the first president of the joint associations, and owners and Mackey with some lawyers were about to start some meetings. And Mackey recalls going into this meeting, and he has a quote that kind of goes as such. I was supposed to meet their negotiator and their lawyer, two on two. When I walked in, there were 9 of them, and I knew it wasn't fair. Then their guy said, young man, before we talk to you, I want you to sign this paper to show your good faith in bargaining. Now, I didn't like this at all. First, he had forgotten my name. and they had stroked me so much in meetings in Hawaii and Florida and New York. Secondly, they wanted me to sign it without reading it. And thirdly, my lawyer agreed with him, saying, "Boilerplate, boilerplate, sign it." I said, "Wow." Now my lawyer is with them too, so it didn't seem like a fair fight for Mackey. The video, though, talked of his integrity and how he was an unwavering dude, even dealing with 16 of the most powerful men in the same room. Not giving a specific meeting, but you know that 16 different teams, probably the NFL. And Mackey told the guys to go to lunch and he'll read it. They left, he tore that sucker into little pieces, and then he hired a labor law firm, Lindquist and Venom of Minneapolis. Now these law firm lawyers, they told the players, "You should go tell the owners to go to hell." Then after that, they filed a petition with the National Labor Relations Board to be recognized as a union. The NLRB granted certification to NFLPA, and now it's on. 1970, now they are a union. The players are a little bit more optimistic. The owners, they locked out the players for a little bit, but then the players again went on strike. The strike only lasted 2 days, however, because the owners threatened cancellation of the season. If I'm a player there, and I'm worried about the entire season being canceled, I'm already not getting enough money. Well, now I got this decision to make. Do I go back to work for what I feel is not justifiable money? Or do I just go and not have a job at all? Well, I don't know. I guess maybe sure we'll play. And that's probably what the players were thinking themselves. But the result did ultimately end up in the NFLPA signing a 4-year deal to increase the minimum salaries. This was not what the players were hoping for initially, but the minimum salaries would be bumped up to $12,500 for rookies and $13,000 for veterans. They would also have their pension improved, and they would add dental benefits to the health benefit package. The players given rights to have the agents for the first time a part of this kind of agreement here. They were also, probably the most important victory, was players were given the right to have meaningful representation on the retirement board and impartial arbitration for injury grievances. So as we stroll through this journey of the early 1970s, 1971 would be another landmark moment, because this is when the union hired the first executive director for the union, Mr. Ed Garvey, who was an attorney from Lindquist and Venom, you know, the organization that helped originally organize the union. They would end up establishing the first office in Washington, D.C., and launch a campaign to educate the players. The new union would give confidence to players, and the reps would file a suit against the NFL to abolish the Roselle rule for final. You and I know this as Mackey versus NFL, the case that was discussed in more detail back in 55 episode. In 1974, now the NFLPA is starting to feel like there's a home base. We're starting to feel stronger. This is when the NFLPA had 8 people on staff and $200,000 as a strike fund and more experienced negotiation team. This is also when they came up with that theme. Their rally cry was, "No freedom, no football." So the strike begins, and here were the major demands. First and foremost, let's eliminate that Roselle rule. The second demand, they wanted impartial arbitration for all disputes. Don't have the commissioner just decide what he wants. The third major demand was elimination of the waiver system, and the fourth was the elimination of the draft. Lastly, we want individual contracts to protect the guaranteed monies for players. So on July 1st, 1974, the demands did not happen. We're going on strike. This was backed by the NFLPA and more firepower than they ever had before, but no dice because they would end up going back to work on August 10th. And fed up and beat down, the players decided, well, let's take this battle to the courts again and the National Labor Relations Board. The standoff, you know, it would deal through 1974, 75, and 76 seasons without a whole lot of traction. But in 1976, this was that victory for the players. The Mackey case took a long time, but finally settled in 1977. Many players at the time, though, it's like, "Hey, you guys took so long. I don't really support you a whole lot anymore, and I don't have a lot of faith or confidence. Sure, we won now." But even back in 1975, a year after the strike, it was said that less than half of the players paid their dues. Nonetheless, March of 1977, the NFLPA would sign a new agreement. It would result in the benefits substantially increasing, impartial arbitration for non-injury grievances would be won, and substantial reforms to the waiver system. But perhaps the most important victory was the Roselle rule was squashed. Collectively bargained system was put into place instead of that Roselle's one-man rule on free agent transactions. and the players were getting closer to what they wanted, but they still knew this was time to dig in. And with that being said, by the end of the 70s, the NFLPA gained some ground for the players. However, there would be a long road to trek in the future. John Mackey felt there was hope, though. Here's what he had to say of the deal that was given back in the early 70s and helped the NFLPA get to the close of the decade, and it went as such. They gave us what they wanted to give us, made us smile and say thank you. But from that day forward, we decided to build a legitimate union. All efforts since then have been developed to build our strength. Now we have the strength to take them on. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Football History Dude, and were able to gain some knowledge nuggets of how the NFLPA was transformed from a tiny little club to a true union and organization through the 60s and the 70s. Next week, we get to take a look at one of the darkest eras in the fight between our owners and the players, the 1980s. But for now, dudes, I'm through if you're through.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Football History Dude. To make sure you're the first to get the next episode, please subscribe on your podcast player of choice and head on over to thefootballhistorydude.com for the show notes and more information on the history of the NFL. And remember, dudes, where we're going, we don't need roads.